I want to give up on love. As long as my parents accept a person, that is okay because I cannot go through that heartbreak ever again. My mindset was there is no love. There's only marriage and that's that. From the beginning, I got to see how Eunbi was with everybody. I mistook something that I thought was a signal and then it totally wasn't. So I mistook that as maybe there's something and I started thinking about her a different way. She didn't. So that's how we ended up organically starting. And then from there, what ended up happening was...
Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, a space where two Asian American women share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Tan. Thank you for joining us as we share another story about Asian Americans discovering the abundant possibilities of who they can choose to be, whether it's in their careers, families, relationships, etc. We always share new episodes every Sunday and quotes from each episode on our Instagram page. We already know that this episode is going to be a very sweet and special one, so head on over to our Instagram at Bamboo and Glass for our favorite quotes from this episode.
And we always love finding new ways to interact with you all. And one way we got to do that recently was by being a guest on our friend's Clubhouse show, the Podcast After Show. It was hosted by our very dear friend, Tony Lee, a listener turned friend. And today we invited Tony to share about a very special thing that happened to him on Clubhouse, meeting his now girlfriend, Eunbi. Eunbi is in Korea, Tony is in LA, and we wanted to hear all about how they got to know each other, how they celebrate each other, and how they support each other. So welcome, Tony, to the show!
Hi, woo! How are you guys? I'm beyond excited to be on here because I always say, and it's always true form, if you guys are always in a Clubhouse room, I'm like, you guys have the best podcast ever. So I'm just totally honored.
You're so sweet. And we're so honored that you wanted to be a guest on the podcast because it's always very special to have listeners be turned into really good friends. And so we're so excited to have you. I know that you've been a long time listener. So I have a kind of a fun question for you. So usually with anything love related, I think about our series, Your Next Date, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. For folks who aren't familiar with it, it's a series where me or Sophia invited a good friend who is single, and they would recruit some of their friends to send in audio messages, and we would get a chance to spotlight this friend, celebrate them, send them affirmations, and also give other listeners a more holistic look at who this person is. So Tony, if you were a guest on Your Next Date, like back in last fall, who would you have chosen to speak about you?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know what? I would have done a curveball. I would have forced my dad to actually say something. I would have not even chosen a friend. And then I would have said, like, what do you want for your son now that he's in a mindset to want to be married and go in a different place? And I would try to get them to do that versus, I think, asking a friend who just knows all about me.
That would have been so fun.
No one chose a parent. Everyone chose a friend or a sibling at most.
Yeah. I honestly thought Niles would choose his mom because he's a mama's boy. But this is revolutionary. So anyone else, if we do a season two, think about maybe you could invite your parent.
Yeah.
That would be very spicy.
Okay, Tony, so you just alluded a little bit to the fact that you know, if you were on our show, you were kind of in a place where you were in a mindset of, you know, being interested in being in a relationship. So let's go back to the days before being with your lovely girlfriend. How do you view dating or your romantic life at that time when you were first getting on Clubhouse back in January, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
January 2021?
There needs to be a little bit of origin story to kind of get here. So I have been a huge romantic from the beginning. Like as a kid that you say, like, what do you want to do? It's like, I just want to get married. It's like one of those things, right? Aww. I want to be a dad. So everybody, when I was a little baby, knew like that was my thing, right? Wanted to get. So, and then, you know, kind of going through life, what ended up happening was that I moved back to California after kind of being away in like college and other cities for work. And I told my dad the reason why I'm moving is that I'm serious about getting married. And he's always wanted me to date a Korean girl and wanted me to get married and have family. Like, and I told him, okay, if you need to introduce me to people, I'll be open to it. And so I basically told him I'm all in on this. And then he obviously was very excited. And then he wanted to kind of make me, I guess, embrace the thing of just like blind dates and just like who your parents set you up with. So I went on a lot of those. long story short on that is I fell in love with a girl. He did not approve of her for marriage. Mm. And so long story short, just like a typical K-drama, parents forbid it. And that was that. Wow. And then the second time happened where I fell in love organically in LA. He also did not approve of that girl. So I wanted to, before 2021, marry two different girls that my parents basically said, no, we forbid it. So the mindset that you were asking me is that I moved back to California is kind of like, I'm ready. And my parents basically both said, no, you're not. These are not the right person. I was heading into 2021 going that I want to give up on love. I don't care. As long as my parents accept the person, that is okay because I cannot go through that heartbreak ever again. It was so painful. So my mindset was there is no love. There's only marriage. And that's that.
Wow. No, there's so much to talk about in that origin story. So, Well, one, it sounds like you have a very open communication style with your parents and that you really respect your parents' opinions. And well, one, is that true for your family? And could I also ask of like, for the reasons that your parents gave for why they forbade these particular relationships and marriage, did you personally agree with them? Did you at least, did you see where they were coming from? Or was this something that you were in conflict with them on?
This is going to sound so corny, but I didn't agree with them until I met MB. What they meant, because I didn't know a person like her existed. Because one of the things, I know Sophia's like, oh my God, this is like a K-drama thing all over again. It's like, this is why I love it. No, because the reasons my parents gave, and without going into details, like I did not agree with a lot of it because, I mean, I'll give you one of the things. I told my parents that I've had a hard life, but not as in like financial difficulties or like turmoil or anything like that. There's been just a lot of trauma. And I felt like I needed somebody who would understand and empathize that and have gone through that. And my parents said that, no, actually, we want you to have somebody who basically has never had that and sees life so optimistically and so differently because you've never actually known what a happy life could be. Those type of nuances and things like that where I didn't recognize that myself, but they saw something differently. Just multiply that by like 1,000. And It sounds like then I would have a really good dialogue with my parents, right? No, we just say whatever we want, regardless if it hurts each other or not. So In the end, we get everything out, but it's not that healthy at times. So I would like to say that my dad knows all my POV and I know his POV, but it is definitely not healthy. And it's a dynamic that we continue to work on. So I guess it is a communication style. It's very common, I think, in Asian families, especially if we're the eldest son and the father. But yeah, that's kind of that right there.
Wow. Okay. I want to ask Sophia so you and I are both in long-term relationships and I want to ask like, whether it's like during this current relationship or before, what kind of dialogue would you have with your parents about dating?
Yeah. So I only dated one person before Kevin, and I think we all knew it was not something I was like going to be in the super, super long haul for. But then my parents, like, you know, on and off between these relationships would say, we want you to be with someone who's Christian, even if you're not, because my parents believe that ultimately I will come back to this faith and they want someone who can be my partner who will motivate me to go back to faith. That was one thing. My parents actually don't really care as much if the person I'm dating is Chinese or not. I care a ton. I need this person to be fluent in Mandarin, but my parents didn't care as much as they cared about him being Christian. After starting to date Kevin, my parents' big thing was, we like him, but just make sure that his family isn't going to be hovering over your decisions that you two are going to make, because I'm living in the same city as his family and my parents are in California and pretty far away. So they just said, you know, of all the marriages we've seen so far, the most dangerous thing is when one couple's parents are hovering over the decisions, and that just leads to a lot of tension. And so we just want to make sure that you feel like you two are happy making decisions together and you know why you're making it, and it's not because of parents hovering. How are you?
Ooh, well, you know, Sophia. So, so I've only ever dated one person, and that's my current partner. Kind of similar but different from you, Tony. There isn't a dialogue, and in that we wouldn't listen to each other anyway. So why is there even a point in sharing our POVs almost? There was a time where I think like a year span where my mom and I would share how we felt, but then it was like we would kind of understand each other's POVs, but still very heavily disagreed. And then it would end in like tears and all this stuff. And I think it's also because my mom's biggest fear is also around in-laws, because I think she really had a difficult time with in-laws. And, you know, that's like some K-drama stuff that you always see, you know. Mm-hmm. And my mom, I think, has always been very worried about that. And so she's always thinking like, you should find someone who is as similar to you background-wise. Mm-hmm. So like Korean, I don't think Christianity is necessarily as high. I think being Korean is something that she would really care for. I think the lighthearted reason is that what if they don't like kimchi, then you can't eat kimchi for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. But I think there's also nuances, of course, like cultural barriers, language barriers, especially when if like my parents wanted to talk to my partner. And so that's definitely been quite hard, because I think the reality is that we live in America and we meet all sorts of people, and so we can't always guarantee that you're going to meet someone who, you know, has the characteristics that you're looking for but is also Korean at the same time. Honestly, I don't really talk to my parents about it. They, you know, I will go on calls with my partner and I'll just be like, you know, I'm hopping on a call, and they know who I'm talking to, but they won't really probe any more further into that. But it's been many years at this point, and so like the conversation is definitely going to need to be had. It's definitely hard, I think, especially when the precedent is that we don't talk about it at all. If my dad asks about it, it's like in hushed tones, and like when my mom's not around, he's like, hey, like, how is he doing, type of thing. So. Right.
Yeah, I think Korean family dynamics are so interesting, because I, my relatives, even like, because I was born in Korea, but I moved to the States when I was in third grade, and then I didn't return until like the 12th grade. And then basically the first thing that they would say to me is not like, how are you, how you've been, is don't marry an American girl. Like relatives, like it didn't matter if I had a girlfriend. So it's like, I think there is something in the Korean culture where I think the relatives fear that if you go to America or something, you're going to come back and bring somebody that is not like, you know, something that's something in family values or something like that.
Which is funny because like my extended family mooches off my family all the time of the fact that we are in America, right? They're like, oh, things are so much cheaper in America. Can you bring us a trunk full of gifts for us so that we can reap the benefits of you living in a whole new country? So it's definitely this interesting irony that exists with, you know, a part of your family living in America. Yeah. And I haven't had any experiences on online dating or any virtual space. And I know, Sophia, you met Kevin through Subtle Asian Dating, and you also had played around with dating apps before. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, Tony, for when you were dating, or when you were dating, were you more leaning towards like in-person interactions, like meeting people organically, maybe through friends of friends, or were you also open to meeting people online?
It's a great question. I think I was very liberal about it too, because I actually took a view of that if you can't really text with your significant other in a really good way, I don't think that relationship could last, because how I looked at it is you always have to be in communication with someone. And what do you do most? You usually text throughout the day, right? So it's very important to me to get these like micro signals on what I wanted for my life. And I thought there was a lot of symmetry on if you have chemistry through text messaging even before you meet. So I've always kind of believed that in a very romantic way, that this spark that you see in person is like, is more false positives. I actually felt like if you knew it was by texting and you're excited to open up a message or you're urgent to do that, I think there was something more there. I've always looked at those things. So I actually didn't mind app dating at all. So that's how I met a couple of my other girlfriends as well. So yeah, it's something that I'd never shied up for. But then I also took a really weird approach in that like, if my parents or my relatives set me up with that person, I was really against it at the beginning, because I didn't want someone to like me for my parents' or like relatives, something like that. I would always have at least
like then, you want the first impression to be you, not your family.
Yeah. In a very selfish way, I wanted them to fall in love for me and not anything else. And if you were introduced by parents in the Korean culture, there is absolutely no chance that that's not a thought that's your head. So that's kind of why I was so against it in my 20s. And yeah, to this day, I still think, and now that I understand the Korean culture a little bit more, I get it, but I was very against it, because I think growing up in America predominantly, that's an ideal that I couldn't get over.
Yeah. Also, blind dating is not as big in America compared to Korea. Like, blind dating is a huge thing. That's like part of people's daily routines. Like, you go on a soketing with someone because your friend recommends or your parents recommend. Yeah. And I have a really funny story before we go into your love story. But my funny story, my mom wanted me to go on a blind date. It was like her church friend, I think, had a cousin who had a friend whose son also went to Stanford. And the way that my mom vetted this person was that he was in the army at the time, in the military at the time, in Kunde, and he was on one of those Kunde variety shows. And so my mom saw like a screenshot of him or whatever. She was like, oh, he's good looking, you should go on a blind date with him. And I was like, no. I was just like, that's how you decide, just by the fact that we go to the same school, not even at the same time, because he was on like a leave of absence because of the military, and that he's very cute. But yeah, that's the story of the blind date that my mom attempted me to go on. And so now we know a little bit more about how you feel like texting is a very important part of, you know, getting to know someone, which is honestly very true, because especially during the pandemic, I feel like you text people or video call people a lot more than you get to see them in person, and to understand whether you are, and you realize then that, oh, sometimes things are a little bit awkward being on those different modes of communication. And so to be able to be flexible in a long distance form, as well as an in-person presence, is very, very important. So I feel like we can now kind of get into the meat of this episode, which is the love story. So Tony, please tell us, how did you meet Eunbi?
Yeah, so I was kind of active on Clubhouse in January, and that's kind of when there was a little bit of kind of a wave of Koreans coming into Clubhouse through kind of like cryptocurrency information. And then all of a sudden there was a room that somebody opened. Basically it was like, is there any Koreans here? And then I started hanging out in a lot of those rooms, and all of a sudden kind of people asked me like, hey, we should do like a welcome committee for Koreans. And I said, great. So me along with 8 other people, we set up this thing where basically every day that we would just get up, and it was 4 a.m. my time. And we would get up and say, this is how Clubhouse works, and people get to ask questions and how things were. And then it kind of randomly pick up steam. So why that's important to the origin story was on February 8th, because I have a screenshot. It was the first time Eunbi and I were in a room together. And it happened to be that I was one of the moderators, and she was just listening, and she was kind of seeing what's going on. The next day, I have another screenshot, and I don't know why I took these screenshots, by the way. So there's a little bit of what I would like to call fate that I don't know why I took it, but I took a screenshot of her and I in a room from and we were moderators and just discussing. And from there, organically, we were chatting in those rooms February 9th all the way kind of through when we started officially dating. And that's how we just met. And every day for at least 3 hours, basically, we'd be in a room telling each other stories, hearing each other talk. And we just kind of naturally started DMing each other and all that kind of stuff. But I met her through Clubhouse, through kind of just like a random kismet thing where I was active on it. Some random Korean said like, hey, you're Korean, you know how to speak English, you also do all this. And then we started moderating a room together. We started exchanging DMs and kind of naturally got to know each other that way.
Oh my gosh, Tony, so many questions. Let's do it. You mentioned that it's important to get to know someone's dynamic when you're texting with them. But what was it like for your first impression of someone to be their voice and their Clubhouse profile? Which is really different from dating apps, because on dating apps, you can see multiple pictures, whereas Clubhouse, it's one picture, it's one profile, and you just hear their voice. You can't even see their like face as they talk.
It's actually, this is why I say, in Clubhouse, you can't fake genuineness. Mm-hmm. And because of voice, I actually got to know this person's voice, and I mean that in multiple ways. The thing that we don't get to see in dating is how you interact with your friends or their friends, right? Because you always show the best version of yourself in a one-on-one dating capacity. From the beginning, I got to see how Eunbi was with everybody. And not only everybody, but how she is with me in front of everybody, right? This is a dating dynamic that actually just doesn't exist anywhere else, right? Mm-hmm. And to be perfectly fair, it's not a dating dynamic because we weren't in a mindset of like wanting to date each other, right? So we were just having that conversation. But I actually take these signs as something very important, because understanding how I can envision that person being around their friends and my friends is something that you rarely get to do in dating, because what you do in normally dating is like, do I even like this person? Can I hang out? Can I finish a meal with this person? Do we have commonalities? From the beginning, I got to see more of that, and kind of in that kind of like triple, or I guess like not even triple, like 100 times more intense, and how I could imagine if that person could fall into my life. And I think immediately that's one of the things, because that dynamic was so important. But then we were also DMing each other through all these things, and just I got to know her organically. So yeah, I think what I would say is Clubhouse, even though it's not supposed to be a dating app, there is something to be said about understanding how that person interacts with other people, and it's such a good signal for how that person's going to be with you through thick and thin.
Dude, Tan, we really got something right with our Your Next Date series, because that's what we were trying to do. It's give the viewers and the listeners like a chance to observe how this person is with someone else. And so I think I really like that, because like Tony, you get to know everyone without having to constantly have your brain on and being like, how do I contribute to the conversation? How do I keep the conversation going? You're like actually able just to passively listen. And there is something really intimate about turning on Clubhouse, having it inside your home, and just feeling like these voices and these people are sitting in your living room. There's something like super intimate and like connecting about that.
It's like a podcast.
I agree.
Yeah, totally.
Remember that also that series is the reason why I started listening to you guys, because no way! That's when it was the first time I saw somebody in a podcast form do something that I thought was very inventive. And what I thought was very refreshing was you guys weren't apologetic for kind of trying this new format, saying, this is what we want to do. And then to me, those are like the things why I think I continue to gravitate and listen to y'all's episode. And not that this is like me doing a PR pitch again, but like, that to me is kind of like the essence, because I really think that there is something to be when you're in a feeling that you're inviting people into your living room, right? And I think sometimes podcasts can feel very interviewing, but you guys have always made sure that it's just a casual conversation. I don't know. So everybody that's listening to this already love you guys, so I don't have to explain it, but that series is the reason why I became a fan and kind of ultimately ended up kind of being
here. That's so sweet of you to say, because I remember when we were starting it up, because it was a big commitment, because you were like, you're going to not do other episodes. We're only going to do Your Next Date episodes and do it until we run out of people that we're going to do it with. And it was really nerve-wracking, I remember, just even posting the first person on Subtle Asian Dating, creating the first hour and a half long YouTube video, and creating the post for that, and then the post for Instagram and all, and making sure that we want to present these people really, really well. And so it's nice that Clubhouse kind of achieve some of those things, but the work that you put in is just by showing up as yourself in a Clubhouse room.
Yeah. Do you remember what you talked about in those first rooms? Like, what did she say that like piqued your interest at some point?
Oh, so there's a lot of funny things in there, because the room topic that we were co-moderating in for 3 hours, a lot of those topics were like your relationship things, like your exes and things like that. So I would tell about my stories, and then she would tell about her stories, and it's like things that you would never say to somebody from the beginning. It's like so there was a lot of those elements, but the first real conversation that I really remember with her was there was a room, basically there was like a music room where you kind of recommend songs, and the song that I felt was Let Her Go by Passenger, and she loved that song, so she DM'd me like, oh my god, this is such a great song. Aww. And like that's kind of one of our earlier conversations, but she and I still co-moderate that room together still, and we take requests twice a week and just listen to music with friends. But like, you know, it's those kind of things where it's like the fact that I'm sharing music and sharing these moments with her, like these things all added up. So like there's also funny episodes, because I am in love with IU. She's like my favorite artist. I remember once requesting that song, and then she remembers how, like, because on Clubhouse you kind of mute and unmute yourself as clapping, and she said, I've never seen somebody mute and unmute themselves so much when they heard that song. And it's like, slightly, she's like, I'm not sure if I like that. Like, But like, that's the thing that she remembers. But those are such like funny moments, yeah. right, that you have as a couple. So like, you know, I think I can go on for days about those events, but like, those are like probably two interesting memories. And there's a lot of interesting personal stories and DMs that came from this. But like, yeah, I really love that story because it's like, she saw like how much I liked another person. It was a celebrity. And she remembers that. She still tells me on this day, it's like, you unmuted and unmuted yourself so quickly. That was the fastest clap ever.
Oh,
so,
yeah. I think one thing is making me think about, I'm just drawing a lot of like comparisons with like online dating as well as like in-person dating. So, I mean, going on like a first date can feel very awkward, and especially if like you don't know what to start off talking about, you kind of start off with small talk. And so the beauty of Clubhouse is that you can kind of like jump in and be involved in a conversation like mm-hmm. halfway through, and just you have a particular right. topic. And that's why I enjoy podcasting so much, because I'm able to introduce some of my friends to Sophia, but they don't have to do small talk. They just go in and start talking about a topic that we're all very passionate mm-hmm. about and very interested mm-hmm. in. And I think in a way you get to know that person even better because there is a targeted conversation that we're having. And right, it's also making right. me think about how some people meet significant others through like shared activities that they do together, like sports and whatnot. But that's not really possible during the pandemic. So as a result, I feel like Clubhouse kind of hits that good medium of like, you know, there's a shared activity that you're doing, which is like, you know, having conversations. But even in a group setting in person, people can feel very self-conscious about how they're coming off. But again, I think the fact that you're in your own living room and being able to talk to millions of people around the world, there is still something very freeing about that, where you don't have to worry so much about how you look, how you're coming off as, and you can just unmute yourself like when you're really excited yeah. about something, because you're like, I just really like this and I just want to share that. So it's making me really appreciate Clubhouse the way that you're framing it, Tony.
Dude, Tony, in alternative universe, if I had not met Kevin by the time I started using Clubhouse, I 100% would have been that person who would have met someone mm-hmm. on Clubhouse and just like fallen in love with their voice, etc. And I think something that I really enjoyed about it was I could participate in a conversation without having to think about, like, without having to, you know, show up for a date and look cute and drive somewhere and to think of, and to be self-conscious of, like, how is my face looking as I'm talking? Like, I can just clap and unclap, you know, be clapping wildly for IU or something like that. And it's also making me think about how with dating apps, you know, if I saw someone's profile and they said, I love IU, and I also loved IU, I would match with them, but there's that delay, you know, like I'll match with them, be like, OMG, I love IU. Who knows what they're doing? They might be sleeping, busy, texting some other girl, right? But there's something about it being in real time. All your attention is on this room, and you know that if you miss this moment of that shared excitement, you don't really get that feeling again. Dude, Clubhouse, man, people really should do some more audio-based dating, because Tony is really sharing why it works, and I totally buy it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then the funny thing is, we actually said in the Clubhouse room together that like both of us have had experiences doing long distance relationships. Mm-hmm. So both of us were in a mindset of we will never, ever, ever, ever do long distance relationships. So for us, we weren't in the mindset of actually like we like publicly said like how much we detest. So we were definitely in a mindset of like never actually seeing each other as a potential significant other, right? So I think that was an interesting dynamic in that it was so organic. Like, like without sounding corny, I think we fell in love because we weren't trying to date each other. And I think it was that shared experience as a group together that made us realize, wait, why am I paying so much attention to this person? Why am I stopping what I'm doing or what my regular schedule is K-drama-esque. To notice all these things? I know, right? I think one of the things that, you know, I am not shy of is always sharing my emotions and always kind of going to this extreme. But like, I really truly believe that like there was some kind of kismet here. All these dominoes that had to fall together in a perfect order for us to be together, because she lives in Hong Kong and I live in LA, and we weren't in any remote similar circles. But through all these set of interesting events that happened before and after, we met, and then we kind of fell in love this way. So, you know, I absolutely think there is something to this. And I really feel like if it wasn't Clubhouse or a voice app, I would have never met her. So it's, really, truly value and respect and just have this romantic thing about what Clubhouse is and how without that, I would have never met her.
So you've been in co-moderating rooms together. You're in a lot of rooms together with other people. How did that end up transitioning into like more of like one-on-one conversations? And then how did that organically translate into, hey, we should talk about what kind of relationship we're in?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, I have a feeling you guys are going to use this as like the promo, the quote. But basically, when we were DMing each other, I mistook something that I thought was a signal, and then it totally wasn't. So I, on my Instagram profile, I had a link to my podcast, and the first thing that she did was she clicked on it and said that, hey, I heard that you have throat surgery. Are you okay? And I thought to myself, why would someone even mention that or even listen and click into that link if you weren't interested? Mm-hmm. So I thought she was interested. Uh-huh. It was the first time she ever clicked on a podcast. So she's like, I was talking to this person on this podcast. And then she heard the first opening seconds and it's like, and then she DM'd me right afterwards. So she didn't even think of anything, right? I took this as a signal. So the fact that I got to basically chat with her was totally through a misunderstanding, because she and I, remember, we had no interest in being a long distance relationship. I mistook that as maybe there's something, and I started thinking about her a different way. She didn't. So that's how we ended up organically starting. And then from there, what ended up happening was we decided to do a closed room together. And for those people who don't know Clubhouse, you can do basically public rooms where anybody can join, social rooms where friends can join, and closed room where it's just a one-on-one conversation. You start with somebody. And we just decided to do that one day, and we talked for 8 hours nonstop. And we had other things to do. And then somehow, organically after that, we knew we were in a relationship together.
That's also very impressive, because you're in two completely different time zones and you talked for 8 hours straight.
Yeah, there's... I have so many stories there. But yes, I mean, it was one of those things that we didn't even realize we were doing it. And then we did it. And then we just kind of realized, are we in a relationship? It was one of those kind of weird kind of things, because even though our official, we have an anniversary day, we actually picked that date because it's easier to remember versus when we actually knew we kind of did, because we never had the, do you want to be my girlfriend? Or like in Korean, like, we didn't have any of that. We just kind of did it. We just picked the date because we can remember it easy. So, you know, that's what I always say, like these dominoes had to fall perfectly, because that's kind of how we got started.
Okay, so then you mentioned that you were not interested in a long distance relationship. This person is all the way over in Hong Kong. Like, you know snippets of what her life is like from all these Clubhouse conversations that you're having. And I'm just curious, like, what kind of helped you come to the place where you were like, hey, especially since you're such a romantic and you are in the mindset of like, oh, I would want to be in a long-term relationship that could end up in marriage and family. What were other things that fell in place for you to help you believe that this is the relationship that you do want to be in?
It was actually less calculated than that. It was me knowing that no matter what, I didn't want to stop talking to her. It was one of those things that it didn't matter what the situation is. I couldn't breathe or enjoy my day without thinking I can be with her. And it was one of those things that, like, I told her from the beginning. It was her birthday. It was basically 2 days after, I guess, our first date. And I wrote a card, and she basically said that, you know, it's my birthday. I think you should at least buy a card. I woke up at 2 a.m., went to Ralph's across the street because I know they're open till 3. Bought a card and wrote her something that I, to this day, if I read it, you would think that we've been in a relationship for 5 years. Mm. But that was my genuine heart. Like, I knew from the beginning that I couldn't be without her, and it didn't matter what the logistics were or what we were feeling. I just wanted to be next to her. So I really just genuinely fell in love, and it wasn't calculated.
And
did you feel
I'm just wondering, like, since you've been in like previous relationships, like, how is this feeling different for you?
It's such a good question, and it's something that I've actually thought of a lot about. Why so different? And the thing is, I really think, and even to this day, she's the only person that made me picture her life being with her. Mm-hmm. Like, I joke around with her, but it's actually not a joke. It's like in all seriousness of like how she would be as a mother, what I would do as a father with our kids. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I've naturally always gravitated towards that. And even if we fight or if we have a bad day or whatever it may be, I've never stopped picturing a life together with her in any way from the beginning. So that's, I think, the interesting part is, like, I can't pinpoint to you exactly what were those things, but what I can say is, in aggregate and everything, there's not a single moment that I stopped thinking about us having a future together. Mm-hmm. And I think me knowing that is the reason why I was so relentless and like, I just need to be with you. And it wasn't something that I begged or kind of was calculated. We just both naturally kind of fell into that place.
Okay, I'm just so amazed by how you both, I mean, this is an incredible story, but what's even more incredible is that like you kind of developed these feelings at a similar pace, because if you didn't, then it would be awkward for both of you, right? So what do you think was something, okay, I want you to brag about yourself, Tony. What do you think she saw in you that made her feel similarly about picturing a life with you?
I think in Korean culture, men who are emotionally open are very rare. Mm. And I think one of the things that me, as not only somebody who's done a podcast, but is just genuinely open and very like to think about these things, I have a different color, per se. And people recognize that. Mm. Not only that, there is something that I think that you can't fake over Clubhouse, which is just genuineness, right? I'm not saying these stories are even, you know, some people might be thinking like, who is this dude? Like, nobody actually falls in love like this. He's so embellishing things. But anybody that knows me knows that whenever I talk about these things, I'm not kidding around. Like, this is me. And I think that part of me is something that gravitated towards her. And then here's the also other part. I sound very different when I'm talking Korean. And the reason why I say that and why that's important is that when I talk in Korean, I sound a little bit more childish. And I mean that not in like a whiny way, but just as like a genuine like child. And the reason is that I've always told people when I need to be client facing and I need to be the director who's going in front of clients and pitching this media stuff and all that, I have to be this professional person. But the person that I really want to be is just this kid that just wants to be free and just turn that off and be me, just happy-go-lucky. And my Korean voice really pulls that through. She got to experience both of it because she saw the fact that I can be this person. She also sees how I text. She also hears me talk in English, but she also hears me talk in Korean. And she saw every single dynamic side of me. But the more important side of it is she knew it wasn't fake. And I think that's what she knew and why she also could picture a life with me. And I guess I guess I have to ask her, is that the case? But I really feel like there is something to you just always being vulnerable and you always just putting it out there and just being genuinely real. And people that will want to accept you will accept you, and people that don't. And I'm okay with that, because in the end, if I was just myself, this is what I've always wanted as a kid. I wanted someone to fall in love with me and feel like we did, so.
Okay, I have to hear your Korean voice now since you talked about your Korean voice. So we're going to talk in Korean really briefly.
Okay.
오늘 계획이 뭐야?
오늘은 내 사촌동생이랑 사촌동생 여자친구랑 같이 가가지고 점심을 사줄 거고, 그리고 내가 쇼핑을 좀 해야 될 게 있어가지고.
쇼핑 뭐 할 건데?
내가 옷을 좀 사야 돼가지고. 왜냐면 내가 미국에서 왔었을 때는 사실 짐 많이 살 수 없어가지고 그래서 옷을 많이 없는데 하도 입을 게 없고 여름이 너무 더우고 땀나니까 그래서
하고 제일 좋아하는 음식이 뭐야?
제일 좋아하는 거는 낙지볶음을 제일 좋아하고
한국 와가지고 많이 먹었어?
한국 와서 많이 먹어야지.
Okay. Yeah, I can hear. Okay, I'm curious, Sophia, how your Chinese voice is different, because I know that for me too, when I talk in Korean, my pitch goes up like an octave, and I also sound like a child, and I know that's because I'm mainly around my parents when I talk in Korean, and so I have a more like childlike persona. And so, you know, when people talk about like aegyo, like the cuteness, like kawaiiness in a Korean and Japan culture, like I can like really put on the aegyo when I'm talking in Korean, and I've scared off some friends when I've shared that with them. So I'm curious what, because you said that you really care about your partner also being very fluent in Mandarin, what is it about your personality that maybe shines a little bit more by you speaking in Mandarin, and what about speaking in Mandarin do you value so much in a relationship?
Okay, Tony, I loved everything you said about having Eunbi experience what you are like when you're speaking in English and Korean. Because in my first conversation with Kevin, when I called him that first night that we were texting, we randomly started speaking in Mandarin. And that just, there was something about it that just sealed the deal for me. Like just hearing, because I think Mandarin, there's so much like depth in the vocabulary. You have your everyday Mandarin and there's like deeper Mandarin. And I think just like hearing him speak so fluently, to me, that indicated someone who puts a lot of effort into speaking Mandarin with their family. And I think there's something that just, I just admire that so much, especially seeing a guy be really good at Mandarin, which probably means they put a lot of effort in communicating with their family in Mandarin. And in terms of like what about my personality shines through, I think what shines through is the fact that I've also put a lot of effort into practicing my Mandarin. And I think the tone that I have is, so sort of similar to you actually, Tan, I rarely speak Mandarin with people who are younger than me. I'm usually in actually professional settings where I'm at work and people are like, Sophia speaks Mandarin. I'm like, oh yeah, here we go. And I, you know, do a little smooth, you know, thing in Mandarin. Or in these clubhouse rooms, I was actually hanging out with, it just happened to be people who are older than me and people who had lived in China and the US. And it was people who I had met in these like career focused rooms, but then we were all seeing each other in these Mandarin rooms. And so I was kind of playing up the fact that I both had that professional vocabulary, but also I wanted to appear a little bit younger just to be like, just to kind of highlight the cute, kind of more like that duality of like professional, but also cute. So I feel like I do try to play up the cute Mandarin too.
Yeah, I was going to say, when I visited you in Seattle with James, I think we would hear you and you talk to Kevin sometimes in Mandarin. And I remember just thinking like, there's a lot of sass in what Sophia is saying to Kevin. Like, she's being really sassy right now. I have no idea what she's saying. So I've seen your sass come out like at times when we talk, but I feel like it really came out when I heard you just like switch all of a sudden into Mandarin when you were talking to Kevin.
Oh, I wonder what I was saying. I wish I could remember.
Like, happened in like off side conversations when you're talking to Kevin. Like, sometimes you'll talk in English to him, but then I think sometimes too when you're maybe like impatient with him about something,
or
you're
like scolding him.
Yeah,
in
yeah,
way.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And you speak in Mandarin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Tony, for you, what percentage of time do you talk in English to NB versus Korean?
It's so funny because that's like the number one thing that my relatives care about if I talk to her about my relationship. She is fluent in four languages, and so she can speak Korean, English, Cantonese, and Mandarin, and I can speak in Korean and English, but my Korean is definitely not as good as hers. So this is actually something very important, I think, in why I can develop a future with her, and how I felt that is because I've dated predominantly a lot of Korean girls, but I don't think like I was able to truly express my inner thoughts as well because they didn't understand English as to the level that I did. But there is not a single thing I can't express to her because she understands that. And I think that's a huge difference in a relationship and why we got to know each other deeper. So I basically turn that on and off, and I don't know what percentage, but what I do know is that she understands me 100% of the time, which is very different than what I think I've had in previous relationships.
Yeah, because I feel like there's some, well, so on one hand, there's some words in Korean that I don't know, there's no direct translation for into English, like 답답해 or like 눈치, like those kinds of words. But then there's also so many more deeper words that in English that obviously we have more vocabulary for, where when I try to translate that into Korean, like I'm just talking like an elementary school kid. And so it doesn't, like that sincerity and that almost like that genuineness of what I'm trying to say doesn't quite come across in the contents of that translation that you're saying. Yeah. So I totally resonate with that.
This is what I think is very important in a relationship. And especially, I guess, like for us being a long distance relationship, is that we can't get the emotions and how your body is doing in that language part, right? And so all we have are words. And sometimes we don't even do it through, you know, a FaceTime video. It's sometimes just audio only, right? So those things and be able to express yourself is so important. And I think the fact that I am able to do this with her and she understands me completely and me being someone that is very expressive too, is something that I never realized I kind of needed, but it was so valuable. And I think it's one of the reasons why I have to give her so much credit, because I think she really tries to understand some of the things that maybe I'm saying is not maybe directly translatable, but like she really understands like how much effort I'm putting into it. She always gives me credit for it. So like, you know, the fact that she's always willing to switch back and forth and pick up where maybe I can, or tell me how to say this word that I don't know and not make me feel insecure about it, that is all her. And honestly, it's someone that I didn't realize I needed, but here she came, and like it really changed a lot. And I think my mental health and also how I feel about a partner.
Wow. And so you just kind of mentioned a couple of ways that NB has been able to support you on your like personal growth journey. I'd love, again, for you to brag about yourself a little bit. How have you been able to support her, especially when you're both like halfway across the world from each other?
Oh, man, you guys might make me cry if I say some of these things, but it doesn't matter what she needs. I will drop everything just so I can talk to her. And in a long distance relationship, I made that very clear. And I never stopped showing her how much I miss her and how much I want to be with her. And I'm very unapologetic about it too. It doesn't matter if I say it in the clubhouse room. It doesn't matter if I say it in Instagram stories. If I feel it, I let her know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing that I would say is that she is a little bit more of a private person than me, but she accepts that this is also how I share my love, right? And she never, ever told me to stop doing that. Mm-hmm. And, or like, I may be embarrassed or this is too much. She's always accepted me. If anything, she's always tried to meet me halfway through too. So, you know, I think that's a huge thing, because when your significant other lets you be yourself, no matter what, and accept it and also support it, there is something there. So from the beginning, what I've always, and I still tell Umbi this, is that I can literally be myself without any reservations. And she always makes me feel that. That has done wonders to my mental health. And to be perfectly honest, we've only been dating for a little over 4 months. I've never felt more supported and loved than just her just accepting me for me. And if we end up getting married, that's probably the one thing that I'll definitely put into our vows, because even always that I can just be myself and it's okay, because I'm more than enough for her and she makes me feel that way. So yeah.
Do I take a moment?
It's fine. I guess go ahead. Ask next question.
So I know that part of like the evolving of your relationship, you said that you could just clearly see a future with her, and that was something that you had known since you were a very young boy, where you were like, I want to get married and I want to have a family. Like, I've known that about myself for a very long time. Sophia, I know that we've had conversations about whether we would want to have children and whatnot, and whether like marriage is something that we would be interested in. And so for you, what kind of role do you see a relationship having for you that may be a little bit different from Tony, where he's like, I want to be able to see a future where like we can get married and have a family together? Like for you, what is most meaningful about a relationship?
Yeah, I would say in terms of having a family or having kids, I don't really feel like strongly either way. In the way that I've seen Kevin interact with my sister, I feel like he would be a very attentive and kind like caregiver to a kid. The summer before I met Kevin, I wrote this big document of like, before I even knew what the word manifestation was, I wrote down every single thing that would matter to me. It was very particular, actually. I'm super shocked that some of the things end up coming to be true, even though I didn't intentionally like manifest it or something. But I think to me, like the word teammate comes to mind. Like if I'm going to be going through life and just wanting to really count on someone, like I would want that relationship to be with someone who I feel like can empower me in all the ways that I would want to feel empowered. Is that kind of vague? That's just
no,
how I feel.
I think it makes sense, because like I'm thinking a lot about how you're the eldest child in your family, and so I feel like there was a lot of responsibility placed upon you. And so I could imagine that, you know, being able to share that responsibility with someone and to know that, you know, this person will be able to step up in times when I need them to. So that, I think that totally makes sense. And I think that's very clear to me. Because for me, I was thinking like the word that comes to mind is home. And I think that also probably comes from the fact that like I've just moved around so much. And so I've never had like a stable physical space for myself. And so the thing that I take biggest comfort in is for there to be someone who makes me feel like I'm at home. And so that's the word that I would use. So it's like home, teammate, and like future with family and kids. So yeah. Oh, this is also tender, because I feel like there's like all these nuances, right? Of like, what does it even mean to have a future together? And so it's just really cool to hear like what particular words that we like kind of ground our relationships in.
Mm-hmm. Tony, one of the things that I saw on your social media, because you were talking about being very expressive, is I was just observing the way that you celebrate each other, especially birthdays. I want you to tell the story. Like, how do you two celebrate each other while being across the world from each other?
I'm 36 years old, and I tell you this, I've never had a better birthday in my life, and I didn't even get to be with her. And it all started, we were co-moderating that music room, right? We're both DJs and doing that. She stops in the middle and says, just wanted to say a happy birthday to you because it's your birthday in Korea time. An hour later, she said, happy birthday, because we're still in the room, and saying it because it's now your birthday in Hong Kong time. And then she would later call me and say, happy birthday, is midnight your time, and things like that, right? She not only said that in public and sent me messages, but she also tweeted that, and those are her first tweets. And not only that, she set up an event where we had a lot of our Clubhouse friends together, and all they would do is what are the experiences they had meeting me on Clubhouse and what they have witnessed between Umbi and I and things like that. And it was an event where I just got all these praises, and I've never felt that, but I felt so loved. And then she spoke, and then of course I cried like a baby. I bawled because the things that she was saying just like moved me to the core. And the interesting thing after that too is, like, of course she sent me a card, of course she sent me gifts, and those are things, but we talked for the entire time until even though it was past my birthday, she didn't stop, just kind of like continuing to talk to me no matter what until my birthday was over at LA time. So she made this my birthday the longest time. We had interesting conversations too, but like the epitome of, I think, like making sure that you felt loved and it was your special day. I can't even begin to tell you the amount of effort that she goes into to make me feel so loved, and I'm so grateful for it. And I think that birthday is the epitome of that. She told me this: you're not ordering a single meal. She Uber eats me every single meal from my birthday, including Starbucks orders, including a birthday cake and everything. Then here's one other thing. It was my birthday, and so she wanted to get me flowers, because in our relationship, flowers have a huge part in it, which I can get into a little bit later. But one of the things that I've never had as a guy is somebody giving me flowers for my birthday. But not only that, she wanted to give flowers to my dad, because she wanted to say that it's not just your birthday. Your birthday is a celebration of you, but it's actually a celebration of your dad who birthed you. And, you know, those are things that, you know, if you ask me how I can envision a future with her, that's the type of mother I want for my children. And that's the type of person I want to continue to love. So those are things that made my birthday something unforgettable. And when her birthday happens next year in February, I am going to do everything I can to just
be next don't year, spoil it. You want it to be a surprise for her.
but I want to make sure that she not only she gave me a birthday couple days, I'm going to try to give her a birthday week, and I want to make sure she knows how much I love her and appreciate her.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you started off by telling the origin story, you know, involving your dad. So how did your dad react when he got the flowers from her?
He was like, I don't understand what this is, but I'm thankful. Like, that's what it was, because it's so weird, right? And then he is just that just very typical Korean dad of just like not showing any emotions. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that my dad realized, and maybe he won't ever admit this, but I'm very different when I talk about Umbi versus how I talked about anybody else that were in my life. And I think he's starting to recognize that not only am I talking about her in a way that is very real, I think he understands the positive impact she's having on me and kind of the joy that she's bringing in my life. So I think he's really starting to notice how real it is. And the fact that he was never supportive, literally never supportive. And then also like, you cannot marry this person or I'm going to disown you. And the fact that he, from the beginning, has always supported me, I think speaks a lot of volumes. And I think that is not something that I did. That is something that Umbi did. And that is something that she showed with her genuineness, even though she's never met him or even met me for that matter, right? My dad reacted without a reaction, but like Korean dads, what you have to know is you can't take that reaction there. You have to kind of see it over time. Mm. Over time, I think it's made a huge impact on how he views me and her.
Wow. I was going to ask whether he's been able to see her optimism and just how all the things that he had been disapproved of with your past relationships. And clearly he's been able to see how happy you are, how joyful you are. And that's, I'm sure for him as a parent, I'm sure that's an incredible change and growth that they are so excited to see in their child, because like they just want their child they just want you to be really, really happy. Mm-hmm. And I am kind of shocked but also not shocked that he said don't be with this person, don't marry this person, or I'll disown you. How do you think Umbi has and your relationship has impacted your relationship with family as well?
I gotta collect myself before I know this, because I'm gonna get emotional, but I really did give up on love completely right after kind of the last time. And what that basically meant was that I was saying that I choose you, Dad, over any of my personal enjoyment. Whatever you want and picture for me, I'm just going to go with it. Mm. What Umbi did was made me actually dream of love in a way that I never thought love existed. I gave up on something that I didn't know existed, but there she was. And I literally told my dad this at a certain point. I told him that even though we fought, thank you, because if you didn't, wasn't that forceful, I would have never met someone like her or even knew that she could exist or want to fight for something like that. So how she changed that dynamic was that, you know, I have hope. And not only that, I have like greed in terms of what I want love to be. And I'm not going to be apologetic for wanting a half-assed version of that. Like, she is real and I'm going to keep fighting for it. And no matter how far it is, I'm just every day so grateful of it. And I think all that has really translated into not only that, but my relationship with my dad. I'm not going to take this half-assed approach of like, you are this Korean traditional dad and maybe there's a cultural language barrier that we know. I want this to be just as good too. So she's really changed my view on what love and respect is. And honestly, without her, I'm not sure what my dad is in our relationship would be or what my view on love would be. But I do know this, it wouldn't be complete and I'd be lying to myself. Yeah, I literally gave up on something that I didn't think existed. And she just came into my life and changed that view and made me greedier for what love could be in every single way.
Oh my gosh, heart wants like... to like burst out of my body right now. Like, you know, like in The Grinch where the heart starts out really small and like just grows bigger and bigger. Mine was a normal size and it just wants to like fill up this virtual like a balloon space. Popping. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, this is just all so tender to hear and to just hear the impact that one person can have and also how refreshing to just hear someone be able to celebrate, you know, a significant other. Because Sophia, you and I have talked about how we intentionally choose how much of our romantic lives to display like on social media, because we're like, oh, you know, what if we have friends who, you know, are in the middle of looking for love? Like, I don't want to come off as like bragging or be like rubbing it in their faces. But also, like, there are some moments where, like, I do genuinely want to celebrate that and just share it with people because I just want people to see, I just want to share how happy I am. And so, Tony, how, it's interesting because Clubhouse is in some ways a very public platform because people are getting to, you know, see this chemistry between the two of you online. And so how do you navigate how much you share of your relationship? And like right now I'm already like overwhelmed with so much love and joy for you, but I do feel that it's very rare to, you know, see this much display of emotion and affection for and celebration of someone this publicly.
Yeah, it's a good question because in Korean you mentioned aegyo, and when people see me with MB, they see that almost to the point of like Koreans have a saying called ogre, which basically is like you're so cringy that you can't even like put your hands. I am that times like a million in front of everybody, and I'm very unapologetic for it to the point where she has like muted herself on Clubhouse and like thrown the phone across the room because it's like, how could you actually say that in front of people and just be okay with it, right? And the thing is, I have never, like, if somebody asked me, like, are you, like, forcefully doing this? Like, no, like, she naturally brings the side out of me, right? The other part to it is I love writing. And maybe it's because I was journalist by trade, but this is super corny, but I've told Umbi this, like, she just makes me want me to quit my job and just write poetry about her. Like, it's so in that way because, like, I genuinely get overwhelmed by how much love that I feel from her. And the things that she does for us. Like, a lot of people give me credit for being so expressive, but they don't even understand half of how much she is fighting for us and all the time. So, you know, it's like almost if I'm being too expressive, it's because I want people to know how thankful I am of her and how incredible a person that she is. So I think that's why, if anything, when I share, it's always in the framework of her versus I think me, if that makes sense, right? Because I want to celebrate her, and what people see is that as me celebrating love, but it's actually basically an homage to her because she's the only reason why I can speak and be expressive in this way. She's making me want to learn the English language better. She's making me want to write poetry in Korean that I've never did. And that's all because of what she is doing for me behind the scenes that I get credit for. But this might be the first time, I guess, like in a public way I'm saying it, but she's the reason why I'm this. I'm not doing this to show off. If anything, I want to show her off. Mm. And because the fact that I can't be there to make her feel this way, I want to do everything possible from a long distance that I can have her recognize that and feel that and have others recognize her too.
Yeah, and it's not like a showing off of, oh, look at how great my girlfriend is. It's just, look at how great she is as a person, as an individual. Right.
Absolutely.
Dude, Tony, you are such a role model. I think I just want everyone to hear the way you're talking about her and be greedy about love. Like, realize that you can aspire for a more connected, supported relationship, and that people see you as an example of it's okay to be expressive and to just really unabashedly share your appreciation for someone. Mm-hmm. So I hope everyone who's listening takes to heart everything that you're saying and doing.
Yeah.
You guys are so sweet. Thank you.
We've talked a lot about the things you've learned about love and what love can look like, what support can look like, what a relationship with your dad can look like. Is there anything that you've been unlearning?
That's a super interesting question, because I think there are things that I've unlearned on maybe what I need to be as a man. It's very hard for me because I've always felt there was something, a part of me that I felt like I always had to address or had to be better and always have to kind of, like, it's true in life, like, you just have to always keep growing. She's basically told me that that's great, but you don't need to change anything because you're more than enough. And to me, that was such an unlearning part, because here's somebody who says you are fine the way you are, because I love you for who you are. If you want to be better, great, but always, always know that you can just be yourself. And that is a huge unlearning part for me, because I've always felt that I had to be better. I aspire to be better. And the thing is, when you do that, you actually discount the fact that somebody views you as someone worthy, and you're fine the way you are. And if you try to push so hard on that, you actually discount and don't recognize how much they love you and how much they respect you. The unlearning part for me was, I'm okay where I'm at, because there's somebody who's always there to catch me. Once I did that, I think our relationship got a lot better, because I think there was part of me and insecurities that came out, but I realized that I didn't have to forcefully work on that or hide it or try to do it a different way. I had to trust that when she says that I can be who I want and she loves me for who I am, that was more than enough. And like I said, I'm so thankful to her, because she just lets me be myself and know that that's more than enough. And that is why I'm so unapologetic about celebrating her.
Oh my God, Tony, I have no words to describe how inspired is not the right word here, but the feeling of I just feel very impacted by the story that you just shared, by after seeing some glimpses of it through Clubhouse as well as your Instagram, and to be able to hear it fully of how much this one person has impacted you and just really changed the way that you view love is really incredible. And I hope that, you know, people listening to this can see that, like, you don't necessarily have to just be a realist and only think about realistic ways that love can play out, because the possibilities are endless. And that's kind of what we always try to do with this podcast, you know, show the abundant possibilities of who people can choose to be in relationships. And the thing is, like, yes, it is totally possible for someone who is so emotionally open and vulnerable and knew that they had a lot to work on to be able to find love from across the world and to be able to do such a 180, to be able to genuinely celebrate the other person and to feel so supported by another person and to also just heal so many parts of yourself. And so I am just so honored that you were able to bring this story to Bamboo and Glass. Thank you so much, Tony. It's been such a pleasure to have you. And I know that we're going to have even more conversations in the future, especially as, you know, we see your relationship unfold and other aspects of our lives unfold. So thank you so much for joining us, Tony. And to our listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. If you just want to share this episode with other people, please go ahead and do so. Let them know that we're on every podcast platform. You can also follow us on Instagram @BambooAndGlass to hear about more updates. Let us know if you want to hear more love stories, because I think this is something that obviously we're very much enjoying in the moment. And so if that's something you want to hear more about, let us know on Instagram. And in the meantime, if you're a longtime listener and have enjoyed, like Tony, and you've enjoyed our content, consider rating, reviewing us on Apple Podcasts, and also supporting us through Buy Me a Coffee. That would really help us continue the work that we do. And we are just so honored to be able to hold space for so many of these incredible stories. So with that, I hope you all have a great rest of your day. Bye!